Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is All Saints Day, Monday, November 1st, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
Something tremendous has happened. I mean, something's happened to me. And to you.
You feel it too, huh? Well, that's because the Erotic Mind podcast series returns today, and not a moment too soon, either. I truly love interviewing these noted visual and literary erotic artists. And judging from the comments I receive, I guess you do too. I get so much out of chatting with these ingenious people because they never fail to reveal something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. This week's show takes us to the south of England, where we meet a rising star in the firmament of erotic fiction. I have the pleasure of welcoming K.D. Grace.
An American of the best type. So rare.
She is. How did you know that? You know, her first novel, The Initiation of Miss Holly, is receiving critical acclaim, and for good reason.
If it were left to me, every copy should be flung into the Arno.
Oh, don't say such a thing. You probably didn't even read it yet. So, I'll be talking about it and a boatload of other interesting topics, including one that I rarely get to talk about with an erotic artist. This is pretty powerful stuff, sex fans. Don't miss it. I even prevail upon KD to share with us a selection from the fruit of her erotic mind, and she graciously agrees to read a delectable morsel from her new novel. For more of KD, be sure to visit her on her site, kdgrace.blogspot.com. Today's fabulous podcast sponsor is funwares.com, the one-stop place to shop for all of your adult product needs. Of course, you'll find a full line of top-quality sex toys, erotica, lube, and lotions, as well as romantic kits and gifts, but that's not what makes funwares.com so damn special. What makes them so extraordinary is their social conscience, and that, my friends, makes all the difference in the world to a sex-positive guy like me. Their site is chock-full of tips for the conscientious consumer, toy reviews, and a host of community links. And if that weren't enough, Funwares brings you a boatload of informative and entertaining videos featuring my colleague and fellow sexpert, Dr. Ruthie.
I'm not sure we ought to allow this.
No, really, you're going to love these videos. Dr. Ruthie is an absolute joy, and she really knows her stuff. Look for the adorable Funwares.com bunny banner right there in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, KD, and thank you for popping by DrDickSexAdvice.com. It's a joy to have you, and thank you for your willingness to open your erotic mind for us. And now that I've said that aloud, I realize that sounds really dirty. And at any rate, now that you're here in my clutches, would you like to say hello to everyone in our audience?
Hello, everyone.
And before
it's
we
nice
get
to be here.
Oh, good, good, good. I think so too. Before we get started in earnest, however, we both owe a big shout out to our mutual friend KJB. You know, she's a big fan of yours. And, in fact, she's the one that insisted that I absolutely must have you on this show. And since I do everything Mistress K says, here you are in the flesh, so to speak, as it were. Is K as bossy and pushy with you as she is with me?
Well, she has never actually been bossy and pushy with me, but I think that might be just because I completely obey her all the time.
Yes, isn't she the one who must be obeyed? I mean...
She is indeed, yes.
Oh, we're going to get in so much trouble when she hears this. Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah, and I feel really sorry for you because I've read some of her punishment stuff, so...
Oh, yikes. So, alrighty then. Let's get to talking about you and your writing. I've been spending a lot of time on your website, K, kdgrace.blogspot.com, and I think you're pretty marvelous. I've always been fascinated by what people write about themselves on their websites, and this is what you say about yourself. K.D. Grace is a hopeful romantic. She lives in England with her husband and a back garden full of freeloading birds. She is passionate about nature, writing, and sex, not necessarily in that order. She enjoys Chinese martial arts, frightening attempts at learning piano, long-distance walking, and extreme vegetable gardening. Her novel, The Initiation of Miss Holly, published by Excite Books, is now available, and she has had erotica published by Excite Books, Mammoth, Cleus Press, Black Lace, Erotic Review, Ravenous Romance, and Scarlet Magazine. Holy cow, you are not just another pretty face, huh?
Well, I try to think there's a brain in there somewhere.
So, okay, let's pull that apart a little bit. You live in England, but you're not British, right?
Right. We've lived here about, well, off and on, all total 8 years. We kind of stuck in a 4-year stint in Russia in the middle of it all, but
kidding.
We kind of consider this our home now. So,
kidding. So you're globetrotting. Are you American originally?
Originally, yeah.
See. Okay, cool. That's cool. What brought you to Betty Windsor's realm? Are you really a CIA spy?
Would you like to know? You know what they say if I tell you that.
So, they're going to kill me and you.
Yeah, and it wasn't really all that exciting. I mean, it was. It's my husband's work that brings us here.
Oh,
and
see.
Fortunately,
okay.
I get to tag along, and he gets to work, and I get to play. So it's pretty cool.
So you have just the one husband. That's kind of boring.
I know it sounds that way, but believe me, I could not handle two of him. He is definitely the all-purpose, cover-all-bases sort of guy.
I love it. Oh, I absolutely love it. So, passionate about nature, writing, and sex, not necessarily in that order, so do tell. What order is the proper order?
Well, the thing is, I'm not exactly sure. It sort of depends on what the situation is and what the time of day is and how I'm feeling at the moment. So, you know,
it's
pick
a situational
one and maybe
kind of
you'll
thing.
Be right. Exactly.
Dare I ask about the martial arts and the piano? If I misbehave, will you punish me with a flying kick or a bad show tune?
Well, I think that you would probably suffer a whole lot more from my piano playing than you would from my flying kick.
Okay, and how about extreme vegetable gardening? Is that kind of like plant BDSM? And do you tie up your tomatoes really, really tight?
I do tie my tomatoes up, always.
Because you gotta.
You know, that's part of my spring ritual, because you gotta. And
They're unruly otherwise.
They're very unruly, and then you have to pick out all the, you know, the evil bits that grow out, and they're very unruly, and they must be disciplined. But that's actually, though, it's more the fact that if there's a bare corner that has nothing in it, I plant things in those corners, so there might be a zucchini growing, you know, in the back garden in the corner where there used to be a rose plant, but who needs roses? You can't eat roses. Well, you actually can eat roses, I guess, but anyway, also the gardening inspires my writing because there's
right?
so many wonderful things you can do with vegetables.
See how you are.
Yes, see how I am.
You have been published by all the really big names in erotica. That's got to feel pretty damned marvelous, does it?
It does. I am always amazed at the fact that people are actually paying me to write such fun stuff, because it's so much fun.
Right. Do you know how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you have out there? A lot of the people I talk to have so many that they hardly know, and that breaks my heart.
Yeah,
a frustrated published author myself, but
well, I've only been seriously at it for, when I say seriously, it's not, you know, it's fun, like I said, but for about 3 years. I've got 21 short stories out at the moment in all the different, you know, web-based and magazine and the hardcover and everything, and then of course my novel. So I feel pretty proud of that. I think it's a pretty good start.
gosh, I guess. In just 3 years.
Well, that's as long as I've been writing erotica. I've written a lot of other stuff before that, and I have, you know, enough rejection slips to... I'm thinking of Bonfire Night this year. There may be a wiener roast with my rejection slip.
Exactly that. So how long have you been writing?
I can't remember when I didn't write, actually.
Is that right?
I remember when I was in first grade before I could write, I used to draw pictures and tell stories about them.
Oh.
And I would find my five or ten word vocabulary of the three and four letter words that I did know was just not enough to really tell an effective story.
Right.
So,
you know, that's one of the universals in this series. I've had the joy of talking to dozens and dozens of authors and artists, and both sets of erotic artists, graphic and literary, both say, generally speaking, that they started as children in their chosen art form.
Sometimes it feels like it's one of those disease things, you know, that you really you can't do anything about it. You've got to just manage it because it. You know, that's the bad days. Most of the days, it's way too much fun. But occasionally, you think, all right, this is like, you know, Writer's Anonymous type thing.
So you feel compelled to write, yes?
I do, yeah. I've talked about this with KJB, actually, feeling sort of like when you don't write, you get kind of twitchy, you know, and you start with withdrawal symptoms.
Yeah. How interesting. When did the erotic stuff begin to show up in your work? And was it an active choice on your part? I mean, did you say, you know, I'm going to start writing erotica now? Or did you just find that, you know, smutty stuff was showing up and you went, oh, cool?
Well, I always sort of saw my writing as a place that I could do all those, you know, things like when some kids were writing obscenities on the wall, I was putting it in my... it was more that it was a place where I could experiment and it was okay. You know, you could do anything you want on the written page.
Yes.
And I always felt like, well, you know, people do this. They do have sex. I know that they do, even when I was, you know, before I had the great experience. And you go, so why don't they write about it? And why can't I write about it? And, you know, and as my writing became a bigger part of my life, I was always, my sex scenes were always pretty... not graphic in the bad sense, but I didn't feel like I should have to hide anything.
Right.
I felt like it's sex, and for one thing, I still think this is the truth, that you discover more about the characters in a novel when they're having sex than you do at any other point, because they're so vulnerable.
That's a very interesting thing that, you know, no one in this series has really said before. So talk to me about that some. That's fascinating to me.
Well, I just found in some of the things that I've read that I liked the best as far as the romance and sex bit, or even if it's sex with no romance, what it is that always intrigues me is the fact that it's like this open, wide open view of the person, the character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a slice of the character that you will not get any other way, because you've got a person who all the defenses are down.
Right.
When you're having sex.
Right.
And even if you're someone who has everything to hide, and you do have your defenses up during sex, that in itself says something about you.
No kidding. Well,
something
You're so right about that. And I think I'll never read erotica again without thinking about that. Because, that holds true in my work as a therapist. You know, I mean, I find that I can have a much greater insight into a person if they tell me about, you know, their sexual lives than if, you know, just casually talking to them about, you know, one thing or another. So that's fascinating.
Well, I think that the same thing does apply. They're the most vulnerable when they're telling you about their sex life, because that's such a basic, such a, you know, a basic part of who we are.
Yeah. How interesting. Fascinating. Thank you for that. Before we begin talking about your recently published novel, I want to make sure that you know that you're welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment. Because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruits of that mind's labor is even better. Okay?
Well, asking me to burst into reading, it might be a dangerous thing for you because I've got all my books all around me here.
Oh, yay! So is Katie Grace your given name or a nom de plume? And if so, why?
Katie Grace is a nom de plume, and I sort of see that as my sort of like a privacy shield. I'm very much an introvert. You may not realize this, but I am. And
no, I would never have guessed.
That's what everybody tells me. I have to tell them repeatedly. No, but really, I am. I really am. I'm an introvert.
Well, you must be, but KD Grace is not.
KD is not. See, that's the beauty of it.
See?
And that's the whole thing with a nom de plume. I can put myself out there and read to people and talk to people, and I present this, you know, really raunchy erotica, and I can do it as KD. Where me personally would probably the other part that lives in me would probably not be so comfortable with putting herself out there like that.
That's really interesting because I've heard similar things from other people in this. In this series, and I think it's very liberating. There's very little distinction in my mind between Richard Wagner and Dr. Dick, but I guess when I'm acting in my professional capacity, I can be as ribald as I would like to be, and people just kind of grant me that opportunity.
I think It does make a difference. And like for me, I feel like no matter what I wrote, even if I wrote, mainstream crime or something, I would still want a nom de plume because
right.
I need that separation.
Right.
And, I'm not enough of an extrovert to put myself out there as who my personal life is. I like to keep, the distance.
Right.
And that's not, it has nothing to do with the fact that I'm writing erotica. It has to do with the fact that I'm writing and I'm putting stuff out there that's fiction and that's not real life. I mean, it is. Of course, it's all a part of your brain and what's going on up there.
Right.
But it's not the world that I live my everyday life in.
That's fascinating, and that's a really good point. So our audience should know that you and I introduced ourselves online about a week ago. And in the course of that conversation, we discovered that we have similar things in our background. And with your permission, I'd like to pursue some of the threads that you and I discussed on our first meeting. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh,
that's
good,
fine.
Good. So by way of introducing this area of discussion, I want to ask you to tell us a bit about the plot line of your new novel, The Initiation of Ms. Holly. As I understand it, it is a retelling of a very old story. Is that right?
Yeah, it is, actually. The Initiation of Ms. Holly was inspired by being stuck 4.5 hours in the Eurostar tunnel in a train in the dark. amidst the complaining and the groaning and wondering if we were ever going to get home, the experience made me think about the Psyche and Eros myth in Greek mythology and the idea of not being able to see your lover's face until you...
Fascinating.
It was just, this idea of here you are in the dark on a train and you can't see your hand in front of your face. What if you met an encounter? What if you had an encounter on the train and you couldn't see this person's face? And I wanted to be able to carry out that idea of not really knowing if your lover was divinely beautiful or some kind of monster and never being able to know until you completed these tasks.
Fascinating.
So that was actually how it came about, and I wanted to see if I could sustain that intimacy, that juxtaposition of the intimacy and the disconnect through the whole novel.
Cool beans. Would you mind sharing a juicy tidbit with us now?
Oh, I'd love to.
Ooh, yippee!
this is my favorite. I love doing this part. I will actually start at the beginning because I think once you get that picture, then you're off.
Great.
So to speak. Okay. He practically fell on top of Rita, his hand grazing her left breast in the complete darkness. She yelped and grabbed him to keep from losing her balance. God, I'm sorry, he gasped. Bloody nuisance, this isn't it? His voice was warm, melodic, by far the most pleasant thing that had happened to Rita since she left Paris. Oh dear, you're trembling. Are you all right? I'm claustrophobic. Her words were thin and shaky, as though she didn't fully trust herself to let them out. It wouldn't be so bad if I didn't know where we are. For an embarrassing moment, she realized she was still clinging to him, but the embarrassment passed, and suddenly she didn't care. If they were going to be trapped in a train, in the Eurostar tunnel, beneath a gazillion gallons of water, she didn't want to have to do that alone. He either understood, or he was too polite to leave her in such distress. He wrapped his arms around her, engulfing her in a muscular embrace, the scent of which was maleness, barely masked by deodorant and some spicy cologne which was fading at the end of a day much longer than either of them had anticipated. Don't worry. In the darkness, he misjudged the distance between them, and his lips brushed her earlobe. It's just an electrical malfunction. Anyway, we're better off down here than in the snowstorm up above. Sounds like all of London is shut down. Who'd have expected snow this late in the spring? Never mind that. Where else do you get a chance to cuddle strangers in the dark? He pressed a little closer to her, and she was relieved to find other thoughts. Thoughts more welcome than those of their predicament, pushing their way into her head. He felt good, broad-shouldered, and tall, easy to lean on. Why are you huddled here in the corner, rather than hunkered down in your seat? She concentrated on his warm breath, pressing against the top of her ear. I was on my way back from the loo when the lights went out, and this was as far as you got. She nodded against his chest, honing in on the reassuring sound of his heartbeat. Shall I help you back to your seat, then? The train lurched forward, and she yelped again, tightening her grip around his neck. No, please. It's better if I just don't move. There was a long pause. Do you want me to stay with you? She realized the poor man had little choice, clenched in her stranglehold as he was. I don't want to be any trouble, she lied. He readjusted his stance and tightened his embrace. No trouble at all. I can't think of a better way to pass the time than in the arms of a beautiful woman. You are beautiful, aren't you? In spite of the stress she felt, she forced a laugh. Ha ha, gorgeous, actually. Too bad you can't see for yourself. He ran a hand down the contour of her spine to rest low on the small of her back. I don't have to see you to admire you. The thought that the man was rather cheeky barely crossed her mind before he lifted her fingers to his lips and planted a warm kiss across the back of her knuckles. I'm Edward. I'm from London. Clearly you're not. Rita, she replied. I'm from Seattle, but I live in London now. Well, Rita from Seattle, we've established that you're an exotic beauty. Perhaps you'd like to return the favor. He lifted her hand to his face and guided it gently over the slight stubble of his cheek. As her hand cupped his well-formed chin, he pulled her middle finger into his mouth and nibbled it, teasing the pad of it with his tongue. Suddenly, her struggle to breathe had nothing to do with being claustrophobic.
I love it. So we have to buy the book to find out how that turns out, don't you know?
Yes, definitely.
So do many people in your life know of your erotic work?
Everyone knows who knows me, and I'm not shy about talking about it. I figure if they have a problem with it, it's their problem and not mine.
Interesting. Right. So what we discovered when we met each other online earlier last week, we both come from deeply religious backgrounds, and I sense that yours was a bit more conservative than mine, but here we are, both writing and talking about sex, a taboo subject in our former lives. What do you suppose is up with that, you and I?
Well, I think, you know, it was bound to happen, really. I think that's... That sounded terrible, didn't it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think you're so right, and I'd like you to pursue that.
Well, I think that I'm not really quite... You know the fascination that I have with mythology that I've mentioned, but I think a lot of that goes to the fact that the myths and the older religions are a lot more open about sex being a part of everything, and sex is a part of religion.
Yes.
It has been forever, and all the myths are full of it, and the Old Testament is obviously full of it. Of course, it's all evil and wicked, but then when you get to the New Testament, the whole thing is sort of like, shh, no, we don't talk about that. It's immaculate conception.
Right.
And I think that, I think the one side of it is, And I like Jung's idea of a ritual being a place for a conduit for the numinous. And I think that there's no time that we are closer to that than when we're having sex, because it's the little death, the out of body experience, the one side of that the divine experience, and then the other side of that is you are down and dirty like your animal cousins. You are so in your body, you have never been more in your body. You're out of your body, and you're in your body and out of your mind. And I think it's the animal cousin thing that that modern religion has trouble with.
Right. And, you know, I feel passionately about the connection between spirituality and sexuality, and I've spent my entire adult life trying to understand how and why these two fundamental human needs got torn asunder. And I suspect that you're as curious about this as I am. Is that right?
Yeah, I really am, and I feel the same way you do. And I remember having a conversation with a writer friend, and she was saying, this was in the early days when I was trying desperately to get published and failing miserably, and she said, if you just wouldn't write about sex and religion, you know, you might. And I said, then what the hell am I going to write about?
I know.
It is that connection, and it's like, okay, there's this big disconnect that happens, and in our writing and in your work, you're constantly trying to mend that disconnect, to heal it, to make it whole again, because it's so much better when it's whole.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and it just seems to me that until we reconnect these two things in ourselves, neither we as individuals or we as humankind will ever be whole or wholesome. Because when there's this disconnect between spirituality and sexuality, spirituality can be so unwholesome, as we have discovered earlier in our lives. And, of course, we know that sexuality can be unwholesome when there's this disconnect. So bringing the two things together is, to my mind, you know, the real wedding of the best things about who we are as humans.
I think that's exactly right. I think one of the saddest stories that is in all of Greek mythology to me is Apollo and Daphne.
Yes.
And that Daphne will not allow herself to be inspired or taken by the god. So she becomes a tree, unable to think, unable to experience. And I never thought about that before, but that breaking apart causes you to be unfunctional in some way, because you're not ever whole again.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, both of us know people in our lives that, you know, have experienced that. They are in some respects trees. They, you know, just go mindlessly through, you know, their lives and are not asking the fundamental questions that perhaps you and I are. And I feel that they are the poorer for it, but, you know, that's just me.
I agree. I think erotica and our sexuality is basically the story of leaving Eden. You lose your innocence, and you can never go back. But mm-hmm. would you, if you could, would
right.
you?
Yeah, right. I also feel really liberated writing and talking about sex, particularly in a culture that is so sex negative. It's pretty radical thing, and I have the wounds to show for it, and I'll bet you do too.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, if we were to sort of do a survey with all of the people who do, you know, write about sex or are artists with, we would find that they all have those wounds.
Fascinating thing.
Suspicion.
Yeah. I think I'm going to start adding this, you know, line of questioning to the Erotic Mind podcast series, because I think it would be fascinating to hear from, you know, all the people that I know so far that I've interviewed. We are products of a culture that fundamentally is sex negative, and we have chosen to reject that and actually fly in the face of it, and it must be therapeutic. You know, it certainly is for me.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can't imagine it not being. I mean, there's so much healing that's involved around just being able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And not just talk about it, but celebrate it.
Oh, so
you know, it's
true.
Not like whisper,
yeah,
let's talk about it.
Or clinical,
like, hey,
clinical.
Exactly. It's, hey, sex, down and dirty. Yes, this is fun. Let's celebrate it.
Yeah.
It's a part of who we are.
How refreshing to hear people talk like that. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
As you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. So let me ask you, are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica?
I cannot tell you what pictures go through my mind by thinking about being a full-time sexual athlete, although you might find them in later stories. I think that one of the things that inspires me most, of course, there's a lot of stuff in everyday life, like I've mentioned, that, you know, but I think it's there's a lot of cliche in the sexual images that inundate us in television and films
and
even, you know, and everything. And I think what a lot of it is that if you pull apart that cliche and you tease it apart, twist it just a bit, there's a grain of truth in it.
Right.
And I think what I like to do with my writing is find that cliche, twist it, and see what comes out of it. And I found that to be some of my best writing comes out of that, twisting the cliche.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, someone like yourself who, you know, can be stuck under the English Channel in the dark on a train and give birth to an entire novel, that's pretty wonderful, if you ask me. So
well,
maybe you don't need to be a full-time sexual athlete.
Maybe that would be a little too much for the world to handle.
Yeah, then where would you find the time to write about it?
That's true.
Exactly. So most of the literary artists I've chatted with for this series have focused their writing on traditional erotica, and each of the authors I've chatted with claim that their writing is part of a much bigger genre, which some have identified as sex writing. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that's true, but I think that it's even a bigger, I think there's a bigger umbrella underneath which it is than just sex writing. I was at a reading in London, I guess it was last week now, and one of the, it wasn't my reading, but it was, anyway, one of the women in the audience asked, so why is erotica ostracized? Why is it just not in all novels, and why is it a separate entity?
Right.
Why is it not part of everything? Because it's a part of our everyday life.
Right.
And I thought, you know what? That's exactly right. Why is it? Because it is a part of the bigger whole. And I think part of that healing that we were talking about earlier will come when there's not like, oh, yeah, there's mainstream literature and then there's sex writing. You know, so to, and I think so that I think there's that coming together has to happen, and it is happening. It's just a slow process.
Well, you know, it's a product of our binary thinking, it seems to me. A man, woman, you know, everything is on poles, you know, the positive pole, the negative pole, and it just, you know, sex writing is over here and legitimate writing or literature is over here. And, you know, that's silly. That's nonsensical. And because life really isn't like that. I mean, men, you know, have female components to them. Women have male components to their personality. You know, writing, you know, should be as fluid, it seems to me. And if it isn't, then perhaps it's not good.
Absolutely. I agree. I think that, you know, that wholeness has to be, the dichotomy is not just on the outside, it's on the inside as well. Like, I'm all man and I'm all woman. Well, forget that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, we know for a fact that that's not the case. It never has been.
Right. And besides, if we were totally one or the other, we wouldn't recognize the other. It just,
that's true.
Know, we wouldn't, there would be nothing that would compel us to be together with the other if we were just the one. That's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I'm just looking at my clock, my dear, and I've noticed that we are at the end of our time for today, and I'm just getting to the real marrow of you, as it were. May I ask you to come back and join us and possibly read for us again next week?
Oh, yes, please.
Oh, yippee. But before we go, I'm going to ask you to give us your website address and walk us around a bit and let us know where we can buy your work.
Okay. My address is kdgrace.blogspot.com /. And what you will find on there is some of my own ramblings. And although I try not to do too much navel gazing, and you will also find any events that are going on that I think that you need to know about in the area, and you also find a listing of all of my books along with a short blurb for all of my books. Gosh, that makes it sound wonderful.
It does, and it is.
Yeah, it is wonderful. It is, and I keep thinking they're my books, even though they have other people in them too. But there's a listing of all of the anthologies and all of the things that I've been in, and of course the wonderful The Initiation of Miss Holly, and all of that stuff is there.
Thanks, darling.
And that stuff.
You're also on Facebook, yes?
Yes, I am. I am on Facebook.
Are you a Twitter girl?
I am not yet there.
Yay!
Yet. I'm a bit of.
Because I would have to follow you in
technology anyway. I can only handle one bit of techno at a time.
Good for you. Well, until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace.
I look forward to it very much.
Thanks, darling. Be well. What a marvelous show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my conversation with Katie Grace and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Funwares.com. Shopping for sex toys is a very personal thing, and not everyone shares the same tastes. That's why Funwares carries more than 10,000 different adult products, and new items are being added all the time. Not sure what to buy? Check out their top sellers page, the staff picks page, or their hot deals section, which can be found in the categories area in the sidebar of their site. These helpful tools will assist you in finding the ideal sex toy for you or a friend.
Please, I know how to deal with these people.
Funwares is actually easy to deal with. They believe that the world of adult products is best explored in a safe, private, and secure setting. You know, your own home. What better way to find precisely what you're looking for? And hey, they offer discreet shipping and billing too. And here's a tip. Follow Funwares.com on Twitter or like them on Facebook, and you will automatically be enrolled in their monthly $100 spending spree giveaway. How fun is that? Look for the BunnyFunwares.com banner in the sidebar of my site and pay them a visit, and be sure to tell them Dr. Dick sent you.
Leave them alone. Do we find happiness so often that we should turn it off the box when it happens to sit there?
That's my sentiments exactly. There's one more thought. I hope that you're also following my two other interview series that appear on Wednesdays. One is called Sex Education, and I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles, and we investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. The other is called Sex Wisdom, and here I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. And I can assure you that these conversations will be well worth the time you spend with us. And look for all of my podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health Subcategory Sexuality, or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next time, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.